Welcome back to On the Case, the podcast. I'm Paula Zahn, and thanks for joining us for Episode 18, Trail of Carnage. Tonight, we're on the case in Bixby, Oklahoma, about 20 miles outside of Tulsa. The upscale community became the unlikely setting for a terrifying mystery when a young woman disappeared without a trace. The search for Lacey Hill began just steps from her front door and would lead investigators down a trail of blood, destruction, and pain. It was a chilly winter day, December 23rd, 1999. Christmas was right around the corner, and Marnie Reed was looking forward to spending a quiet evening with her best friend, Lacey Hill. But all of her holiday plans changed when she got a call from Lacey's husband, Ronnie. Lacey's best friend, Marnie Reed.
He said, "Have you spoke with Lacey?" I said, "No, I left her a message. She hasn't called me back."
Ronnie said he had tried Lacey's cell phone number over and over again, but she never answered.
It was very uncharacteristic for her not to call him several times a day, and he hadn't spoke with her since the morning. So he started calling us after lunch to ask if we had spoke with her. It was just really strange for her not to answer her phone.
Marnie was a former police officer and offered to drive to the couple's home to see if anything was wrong. Marnie had a key and let herself in.
There wasn't anything that appeared out of the ordinary.
The lights were on, but the house was eerily quiet. She called out to Lacey, but there was no answer. As she slowly searched the home, she found evidence that Lacey left in a hurry. The first clue was a half-eaten sandwich.
She would have never left food out. She was very meticulous. Her house was very clean. So as soon as I saw the food, I knew something was wrong.
Marnie's fear only grew when she noticed things Lacey would never have left home without.
She left her cell phone there, her keys were there, her car was in the garage.
But it was clear Lacey was gone.
Her purse was missing.
Just then, Lacey's husband arrived home.
Ronnie got home, walked in the front door. I remember seeing him. He had the phone to his ear, was calling someone to see if they talked to Lacey. You could see the look of worry on his face because something was wrong.
Ronnie had called all of their friends and family. No one had heard from Lacey.
Ronnie is not one to be in a panic mode, but you could tell he was extremely concerned.
Marnie Reed called the Bixby police to file a missing persons report. And then she put her law enforcement training to work, analyzing the scene.
We knew that she had to have left with someone because her car was there. We knew that the purse was gone, so I recommended he call the credit card company to see if the credit card had been used.
Ronnie immediately called the bank.
I heard him say, "Oh my God, somebody's got my little girl," which Ronnie referred to her in those terms because she was teeny. So when he said, "Someone's got my little girl," my heart dropped.
Bank records indicated that Lacey's credit card had been used numerous times that afternoon. Hundreds of dollars worth of purchases and cash withdrawals had been made in Pryor, Oklahoma, a city that was almost an hour away from Lacey's home. None of what she saw made sense to Marnie, and she grew even more concerned.
She would have never been that far away from home without somebody knowing. There was just no reason she would have been there, without her car, without her cell phone. Knowing Lacey the way we knew her, it was very easy to figure out something was wrong.
The evidence convinced Marnie that someone had taken her best friend Lacey against her will.
I knew at that point it was bad. We were in panic mode.
Marnie called police for a second time.
I had already called in a missing persons report, and I said, "I need to change that. It's an abduction. Someone has taken her."
It was a tense time for Marnie and Ron. As they waited for police, they became fearful.
It was kind of just a waiting game until the police officer arrived. As far as the situation, it just becomes very real.
But when police arrived, they didn't agree with Marnie's conclusions. They saw no evidence that Lacey had been taken by force. Sergeant Paul Tryon.
There was some things that didn't add up. There was nothing, no break-in, no busted windows, no kicked-in doors. There was nothing out of the ordinary, nothing that would give indication that there was a break-in or someone forced their way in.
Investigators thoroughly searched the home.
There wasn't any overturned furniture, nothing disturbed. There was nothing that seemed like there was a fight or a struggle in the house.
Based on what they found, police initially theorized that Lacey had left on her own volition.
I thought there was a possibility that she had run away. With the credit card being used, it could have been her using the credit card. She might have been left to start a new life.
Whether she had been taken or was on the run, one thing was certain. Lacey was nowhere to be found.
It was just like she disappeared.
Marnie was frustrated and tried desperately to convince the officers that her best friend had been abducted. She knew that every second counted.
As police officers, they have to go through all their checks first, and I wanted them to just go find her because I knew that she was with somebody.
Detectives wanted to talk with Lacey's husband to see if his 25-year-old wife might have had a reason to run away.
We asked, were there problems in the marriage? Could there have been an affair? Where was he at during this time?
As they listened to Ronnie Hill's answers, investigators began to wonder if the man who had first noticed that Lacey was missing could also have been the one responsible for her disappearance. Detectives believe that Lacey's husband knew more than he was saying. They questioned her family extensively, trying to uncover issues in their seemingly idyllic marriage. But police couldn't find any problem that would have caused Lacey to leave on her own.
FBI Special Agent Kevin Leglighter.
We interviewed friends. We interviewed Lacey's parents, Lacey's brother, and they all indicated it was a very strong, solid marital relationship.
There was no problems in the marriage. There was no indication of any fighting or infidelity. It was very out of the ordinary for her to just leave for no reason.
Lacey's loved ones were distraught.
Lacey's father, Larry Griffin.
We was ready to go to be with them for the Christmas holidays. My mind was wandering everywhere. Where's she at?
Detectives slowly became convinced that Ronnie Hill was not involved in his wife's disappearance. But it was his ironclad alibi that ultimately led police to clear him.
He had been at work the entire time. There was no doubt that he was at work when she disappeared.
Just hours after Ronnie Hill was officially ruled out as a suspect, investigators got a critical new piece of information. They learned that someone had spoken with Lacey on the morning she went missing. A friend of hers said that Lacey had called her around noon to cancel their plans at the last minute. The reason? The couple's pool table, which they were trying to sell.
She told her that she could not work out with her at lunchtime because she was going to show the pool table.
Ronnie Hill confirmed that the couple had placed an ad in the paper to sell their pool table. But no one knew that Lacey had made an appointment to show it.
Well, we did not know to whom or that it was a male, a female. We didn't know any details about it.
It was a solid lead for detectives.
It was a big coincidence if it wasn't involving the person with the pool table, because it happened at the same time, so it led us to believe that it was connected.
The information that a stranger had been in the house had investigators viewing the scene with fresh eyes. As they studied the room where the pool table was located, they saw evidence of a struggle they hadn't seen before.
FBI Special Agent Kevin Legleiter.
There were two pictures that were crooked in the pool table room. It was believed that there was some type of possible scuffle.
It convinced police that Lacey's family and friends had been right all along.
We feared that she had been abducted and was being held hostage.
As detectives ramped up the investigation, Lacey's loved ones turned to the media to plead for her life.
Lacey's husband, Ronnie Hill.
She's out there and she's going to come home. And we just, as many people that can be out there helping us, the better.
Lacey's brother, Larry Griffin Jr.
I just let my sister go. I mean, she's not done anything to you. She's never done anything to anybody. There's no reason for you to have her. There's no reason for you to keep her. Just let her go. Just give her back to us. Please, please.
Lacey's friends and family did everything they could to try to bring her home.
We started recruiting people in the community, friends, neighbors, to try to hand out flyers and go out into the community and get the word out.
As those closest to Lacey spread the word about Lacey's abduction, investigators continued to track the activity on Lacey's credit cards, hoping that her kidnapper would leave a paper trail for them to follow.
We wanted to find out who was using the card, where it was being used, and track them, and that would give us a lead to locate Lacey.
Police were fully aware of the magnitude of the situation.
We knew that we had to do it as fast as we could because every minute counted. The longer she was gone, the greater the chance that she would be harmed.
Investigators discovered that Lacey's credit card had been declined at a Walmart in Pryor, Oklahoma. The store's surveillance cameras had recorded the failed transaction. FBI specialists were sent to analyze the video.
We saw a white male individual who was wearing a dark and white colored jacket conducting the purchase. There was also a female with that male.
The discovery raised two important questions. Who was the man using the credit card? And could the woman with him be Lacey? Detectives were frustrated by the blurry images on the surveillance video.
You could barely make out any faces. You could see it was male and a female in there. It was going through a checkout line.
As investigators examined the video frame by frame, more details began to emerge.
The male subject had on a very distinctive jacket. It was like a football-type jacket. It had USA in big letters down the sleeve. It had a big emblem on the back. So looking at that, I was hoping that might be the clue that we needed.
Then detectives turned their attention to the woman in the video. Her body language was puzzling. It didn't appear as though she was being held hostage.
It appeared that the female was acting under her own free will and did not appear to be under duress.
Investigators decided to show the surveillance video to Lacey's family in the hopes that they could identify either person captured on tape.
I wanted the family to see it.
Police raced to Lacey's home. They had to get answers fast if they had any chance of saving her life. On the Case, the podcast will continue in a moment. There's always someone out there who insists on doing things the hard way. That friend who was still paying for a subscription they forgot they had.
You know, the one who refuses to update their software because it still works. Or perhaps they just insist on overpaying for their mobile phone. No one wants to be that person. That's why you should switch to Mint Mobile. Stop paying way too much for wireless just because that's how it's always been. Mint exists purely to fix that. Same coverage, same speed, just without the inflated price tag. The premium wireless you expect. Unlimited talk, text, and data, but at a fraction of what others charge. Ready to stop paying more than you have to? New customers can make the switch today, and for a limited time, get unlimited premium wireless for just $15 per month. Switch now at mintmobile.com/OTCpod. That's mintmobile.com/OTCpod. Limited time offer. Upfront payment of $45 for 3 months, $90 for 6 months, and $180 for 12 months. Plan required. $15 a month equivalent. Taxes and fees extra. Initial plan term only. Over 50 gigabytes may slow when network is busy. Capable device required. Availability, speed, and coverage varies. See mintmobile.com. Lacey's loved ones anxiously watched the surveillance tape, hoping they could advance the investigation. Lacey's best friend, Marnie Reed.
I knew immediately that I didn't recognize the man in the video and that the female that was with him in the video was not Lacey. It was obvious it wasn't her.
Detectives knew they had to find someone who could identify the man and woman in the video, and it was critical that they do it quickly. Sergeant Paul Tryon.
We had to get someone that could identify these people. Even if they weren't the ones that had anything to do with her disappearance, they did have her items, and we had to find them so we could find Lacey.
Police thought that someone might recognize the man at the register because of what he had been wearing.
The jacket was the key, and us making the decision to release it to the media.
Investigators released the surveillance video to the public, hoping someone would come forward with information.
Family and friends of the Hill family rushed to their home last Thursday when 25-year-old Lacey...
And Lacey's family added their own public appeal for any information that might help police find Lacey. Lacey's husband, Ronnie Hill.
I personally watched the tapes. It's not my wife. We're just trying to get the communication out. Anything you know, if you saw something strange, just call.
As the hours went by, all Lacey's family could do was pray. Lacey's brother, Larry Griffin Jr.
None of us have eaten in 3 days. None of us have slept in 3 days.
Marnie knew in her heart that the odds of seeing Lacey alive again were slim. But she tried to remain optimistic.
We just lived in the moment and focused on trying to find her. I was hoping that it was one of those rare cases that, by miracle, the victim comes home.
Then there was a break in the case. Within hours of the videotape being broadcast, police got a stunning call. The tip came from the last person they ever would have expected.
She explained that she was one of the people in the video, and the male person in the video was her husband, Stephen Ray Thacker.
Trina Thacker had been watching the news about Lacey Hill's disappearance when she recognized her husband in the clip from the Walmart surveillance video.
I kept looking really close, and I could see the jacket, and I knew his body movements. I was like, that's Steve. I was like, oh my gosh, that's him.
As Trina watched the video, there was no doubt in her mind that it was her husband's image that had been captured. And that wasn't all. She realized that she was the mystery woman on the surveillance tape.
I could feel my heart like in my throat and thought I was gonna pass out. In my wildest dreams, I would never have thought that was me and my husband at Walmart. I was a complete wreck.
Police wanted to know everything about the couple's trip to Walmart. Trina said that she was surprised when her husband asked her to go Christmas shopping because they had been struggling financially.
He came in so excited. He's like, I talked to my mom. He said they wired us money, and I believed it. I thought it was true.
Trina insisted that she had no idea that her husband was actually planning to use Lacey's stolen credit card. She hadn't been at the checkout counter to witness the transaction.
He gave me the keys and told me to go get the car and bring it up front for the gifts. I never in my wildest dreams would have thought, you know, that he stole someone's credit card.
Even though Trina had contacted police, detectives were suspicious about her possible involvement in the crime.
We have to suspect everybody and any involvement in something like this. So we had to investigate her just as fully as we would anyone else. We looked at the tape and, of course, analyzed the actions on the tape. And then we also asked her to do a polygraph, and she agreed.
Although she maintained that she had nothing to do with Lacey's disappearance, Trina was visibly shaken when police hooked her up to the lie detector machine.
I was trembling. I had sweaty palms. It was overwhelming. I felt like I was in a nightmare.
Trina was willing to endure the stressful test in order to clear her name. She desperately wanted to do anything she could to help investigators.
I knew I was innocent. I had nothing to hide. And so I told them everything I knew. And I was honest about everything.
Trina Thacker passed the polygraph. She admitted that she was worried about what Stephen might do if he discovered that she had been talking with investigators.
To have not just a family member, but a close family member involved in that, it had to be extremely hard for her to call the police.
One thought consumed her.
He's gonna kill me and my family. I was scared. I was terrified. I wanted them to find him because I was worried for my family. More than anything, I really was worried about retaliation for me calling on him.
Trina had just married Stephen Thacker after a whirlwind romance.
We were only married 3 months. I only knew him probably a total of 6.
Remarkably, she knew very little about her husband's background.
There was so many things that he was hiding.
Detectives learned that one of the things Thacker had been hiding from Trina was his criminal history. FBI Special Agent Kevin Leglight.
Those crimes included larceny, burglary, auto theft, and check forgery charges.
But none of Thacker's many run-ins with law enforcement had ever been this serious. Police wanted to talk with Stephen Thacker, but Trina said he had disappeared the night before. He had taken her car to run an errand and never came home.
He says that he left his wallet at Walmart. He's like, I will be back later. That was the last time I saw him.
Detectives now believe that Thacker was holding Lacey Hill captive. They asked Trina if she knew where her husband might have gone.
There was a cabin that we were going to possibly buy that he was working on. And I've been there a couple of times, but he would go up there and work on that cabin. That was the first thing that went into my head, that cabin. It's isolated. No one's there.
As investigators raced to the remote cabin in the woods, they hoped they could get there before it was too late.
It was our hope and belief that Lacey Hill was still alive. Every second counted.
I was hoping that we'd find Thacker there and Lacey would still be alive.
When investigators arrived at the isolated cabin, there was no sign of Stephen Thacker
his car, nor Lacey Hill.
Police cautiously entered the cabin and began to search the cluttered filled room for any signs of the missing woman.
Agent Dennis Franchini.
It was completely littered with debris. There were old mattresses, old box springs in there.
But amidst the chaos were important clues.
There was a folding metal chair in there. They observed zip ties along the bottom legs of the chairs.
Investigators were troubled by what they had found.
They were concerned about the zip ties because the zip ties looked like they had not been there fairly long, as opposed to all the other debris. They were fairly clean.
Investigators continued searching and made another disturbing discovery.
They found a purse in the cabinet, and it had Lacey Hill's identification.
Lacey's purse led police to a chilling conclusion.
I was convinced that she'd been zip-tied to that chair and held there for a while.
As detectives looked at the empty chair in the middle of the cold, filthy cabin, they couldn't help but imagine the torment Lacey Hill had endured at the hands of her kidnapper.
Everybody still had that hope that he was on the run with her.
Detectives searched for more clues to help point them in the direction of Stephen Thacker and hopefully Lacey Hill.
At that point, they took their time because it was a small area and they were very meticulous in processing that scene because they didn't want to contaminate any evidence that might have been in there. So it was approximately 2 hours they were in there processing things and identifying evidence.
We wanted to make sure we have everything that we could possibly find in that shack to hopefully find Lacey or find out what occurred.
It was a daunting task.
We took a long time to get from where the chair was back, and it was full of a lot of items. It looked like someone had emptied their house into that shack and just piled it up towards the back.
But as investigators slowly and methodically sifted through the endless pile of debris found in the cabin, they made a grisly discovery.
As they're processing this crime scene and going inch by inch, one of the law enforcement officers lift the mattress and box springs. There's Lacey's body there.
The investigators were devastated.
It hit everybody hard. It was like a kick in the gut.
It was a scene of utter depravity. But detectives had to gather their emotions quickly and focus on the evidence Lacey's killer had left behind.
Her face was covered with a lot of blood. Her shirt was kind of pushed up, and her bra was on clasps from the front. She was nude from the waist down, and there were obvious ligature marks on her neck, and she had two puncture wounds in her chest.
Forensic experts concluded that Lacey Hill had been dead since the day she went missing. Her half-eaten lunch was still in her stomach.
She had been strangled. She had been stabbed twice in the chest. And she had been sexually assaulted.
There also were signs that Lacey had fought for her life.
She did have some defensive wounds, so she at some point struggled with her attacker.
Thacker's callous disregard for his victim led police to believe they were dealing with an incredibly dangerous killer.
Not only did he kill her, but he just discarded her. He put the body under all this debris and hid it back in there and left.
Detectives believe that Thacker had entered Lacey's home under the pretense that he was interested in buying their pool table. He then abducted her and brought her to the cabin where he killed her. detectives had to break the tragic news to Lacey's family. Lacey's father, Larry Griffin.
We was hoping it was good information. Well, it was not good information. They said that, I found your daughter. And we all looked at each other. And then they said, but she's deceased. It was terrible. It took the wind out of my sail. We were all devastated.
Lacey's best friend, Marnie Reed.
Everyone just broke down, and we all just cried.
Lacey's death took an enormous toll on those closest to her.
I really didn't think that her mother would be able to survive it.
At Lacey's funeral, her father tried to remain strong for the family.
That day was probably the toughest day of my life. Would never thought I'd be burying my youngest child very, very hard.
It was hard for her loved ones to believe that the vibrant young woman was gone.
You just enjoyed living life. She was not one to sit home by herself. She wanted to be out mingling, doing things, meeting people. She was just very social. She was the organizer. She was always the one that would plan all of our activities. She kept everybody together.
Lacey was a very strong person. She meant the world to my family.
Lacey's death seemed all the more tragic when it was revealed that she and Ronnie had planned to start a family.
That was the next step for them. They were very settled and just wanted to take the next step and have a baby.
Well, she had so many dreams that she was looking forward to having a family. She would have been a perfect mom.
Investigators were determined to bring the man responsible for crushing those dreams to justice. They launched a massive manhunt.
We needed to locate Stephen Thacker as soon as possible. We began a nationwide search. The FBI deployed its assets throughout the United States.
Detectives believed that since Stephen Thacker had already committed murder, he would stop at nothing to avoid being captured. He was considered armed and extremely dangerous.
Once somebody has killed somebody and they go on the run, they have nothing to lose.
He had no concern for human life. To keep from getting caught, he would not hesitate to kill again.
More on The Case, the podcast, after this. If you're struggling with OCD or unrelenting intrusive thoughts, NoCD can help. Book a free 15-minute call to get started. Some thoughts can feel scarier than a true crime case, unwanted violent images, or sudden out-of-character urges. Those are called intrusive thoughts, and everyone has them sometimes. But for people with OCD, these thoughts can stick and lead to overwhelming distress. OCD is one of the most misunderstood mental health conditions out there. It causes unwanted thoughts that can be debilitating. And that's where NoCD comes in. NoCD is the world's leading OCD treatment provider. All of their licensed therapists are specially trained in a type of therapy that's the most effective treatment available for this condition. Therapy with NoCD is 100% virtual and covered by insurance for more than 155 million Americans. Plus, they provide support between sessions, so you're never navigating this alone. Visit NoCD.com and book a free 15-minute call to learn more about how NoCD can help. That's NoCD.com. Trina Thacker couldn't believe that the man she had married was a stone-cold monster.
It was horrible. Horrible that he actually could kill someone. I was terrified. I wanted them to find him.
police knew that a violent predator was on the loose, and they were desperate to find Thacker before he claimed the lives of more innocent victims. But they had no clue where the fugitive had gone.
He was now on the run.
He could be anywhere.
No one wanted Thacker captured more than Lacey Hill's family and friends. Lacey's best friend, Marnie Reed.
You were worried about him hurting somebody else. You wanted him caught.
Just hours after discovering Lacey Hill's body, investigators got a call from police in Springfield, Missouri. It confirmed everyone's worst fears. Stephen Thacker had struck again.
FBI Special Agent Kevin Leglighter.
We received information that Stephen Thacker had been involved in a carjacking.
A terrified mother had called police to report that her car had been stolen by a violent lunatic. Just as he had with Lacey Hill, Thacker had used the classified section of a newspaper to select his victim.
Agent Dennis Franchini.
We learned that Thacker had called this woman who was selling a car, and they had agreed to meet. He wanted to look at the car at the Osco drugstore.
The woman pulled into the parking lot with her 2-year-old daughter and an elderly friend in the back seat. She said that when the man asked to take the car for a test drive, she agreed. But as he drove around the parking lot, he suddenly grabbed her by the throat and punched her in the face.
He knocks the younger woman out of the car, and he still has the elderly woman and the 2-year-old in the car, and he takes off.
While Missouri police sprung into action trying to save the lives of Thacker's 2 hostages, Oklahoma investigators were notified that Thacker's car had been seized in the parking lot where the carjacking had happened.
They find the white Grand Am, which belonged to Trina, is parked in the parking lot.
Investigators searched the car. They hoped to find evidence that connected Thacker to Lacey Hill's kidnapping and murder.
There were gloves in the car, there were maps in the car. And they found a green-handled hunting knife underneath the seat of the car.
Police believe that testing would reveal the knife had been the weapon used to kill Lacey Hill. Meanwhile, Missouri authorities were in hot pursuit of Stephen Thacker. An hour after the carjacking, police got word that he had released his hostages. The young girl and the friend were unharmed. But Stephen Thacker had not given himself up. Missouri troopers had seen the dangerous fugitive as he raced down the highway in his stolen car.
He's spotted by a patrol car. A chase ensues. Thacker wrecks the vehicle and runs off into a heavily wooded area.
Somehow, Thacker managed to escape.
It was dense, thick. We also knew that in his background, he was a hunter, so he was familiar with the woods.
Despite an exhaustive search, Stephen Thacker was nowhere to be found.
No location, no spotting, no signs, no place where he might have holed up for the night. Nothing in a barn, nothing.
The nationwide manhunt for Stephen Ray Thacker continued. Police were determined to bring the man that had abducted, tortured, and murdered 25-year-old Lacey Hill to justice. And they used every resource at their command to track him down before he struck again. The surrounding communities were consumed by fear.
They were concerned because he was on the loose. And we hadn't been able to locate him yet.
Those in the area need to make sure their houses are secure, their cars are secure, and report any suspicious activity around their place.
But despite all the warnings and precautions, Stephen Thacker's deadly crime spree continued. police found his next victim, 24-year-old Forrest Boyd, stabbed to death in his home. FBI Special Agent Kevin Leglighter.
It appeared that Stephen Thacker entered his residence to rob him. The victim appeared to be laying on the couch at the time he was killed.
Thacker had stolen Boyd's credit cards and fled the scene in his car. Police set up roadblocks to inspect every vehicle leaving the area.
Oh, yeah, can you just pop that trunk for me real quick?
But once again, Stephen Thacker had managed to elude authorities.
We did not have any clue where he could have gone. He is a very, very dangerous man that at this point had killed two people, and it did not appear that he was going to stop killing.
Thacker's trail was next picked up at a gas station in Dyersburg, Tennessee, where the body of 52-year-old tow truck driver Ray Patterson was discovered. Investigators knew that Thacker had been the killer when they found Forrest Boyd's credit card and car at the scene.
He was attempting to use the credit card of the victim in Missouri.
The car he'd stolen in Missouri had broken down just across the state line into Tennessee, and he'd called for assistance from a tow operator, and that person probably realized that he was trying to pay for the tow with a stolen credit card.
Police believe that Thacker had fled from the murder scene in Patterson's missing tow truck.
He was beyond control. He was already dangerous, but, I mean, he had no regard, no fear.
A be on the lookout was put out across the state of Tennessee. Stephen Thacker was now considered to be one of the most dangerous men in America.
Man is wanted in connection for investigation of three homicides in the last few days. He is to be considered armed and very dangerous. Nobody needs to take any chances with this guy.
Lacey's loved ones were glued to their television sets as the hunt for her killer unfolded.
It was becoming this national story, and it just kept building, and he was off in the woods, and it was becoming a manhunt. It was crazy.
Lacey's family was crushed when they learned that Stephen Thacker continued to take lives. They prayed that his killing spree would end.
We just couldn't believe he had actually killed again, you know? He's just going to keep killing until they can catch him.
You just felt his desperation. And you knew it would come to an end eventually. But he was in panic mode.
Finally, Tennessee police caught a break. A patrol officer spotted the tow truck Thacker had escaped with near a motel in Union City, Tennessee. Just as officers arrived at the motel to set up a perimeter, they saw Stephen Thacker leave his room to take out the trash. They decided to make their move and end Thacker's reign of terror. 10 days after Lacey Hill's abduction, Stephen Ray Thacker was arrested. Amazingly, he made no attempt to resist. Televised news reports alerted Lacey's loved ones that the manhunt for Stephen Ray Thacker was over.
We were all sitting around watching the TV, and they said he had been captured, and I remember the entire room cheered.
Investigators knew there was still critical work that needed to be done before they could obtain justice for Thacker's many victims.
We had no idea what his demeanor was going to be like, how he was going to feel with us questioning him, and so we had to balance everything with what we wanted to find out and control our emotions. I was hoping that he was going to cooperate.
When Agent Francini and Sergeant Tryon confronted Thacker in the interrogation room, they were determined to get a confession.
Are you willing to talk to us?
Yes.
Without a trace of emotion, Stephen Thacker told them what he did on the day of Lacey Hill's murder.
He told me that he had been calling ads in the Tulsa World newspaper of people that had things for sale, and he noticed an ad for a pool table, and he called it, and a female answered the phone.
Thacker said that the woman on the other end of the line had been 25-year-old Lacey Hill.
I asked her if I could come look at the pool table, and she said that'd be fine.
Okay.
And she gave me directions to her house.
His plan was just to go there and steal something from the house.
But once he arrived at Lacey's front door, it became clear that he had more than a simple robbery on his mind. Thacker said he made sure she was alone before he attacked.
I pulled out a knife and grabbed her by the arm and told her that I wanted some money. And she said she didn't have any on her, that she could go to the bank and get some money.
He forced her out of the house at knife point.
It was a green-handled hunting knife. About a 4-inch blade.
The description matched the knife found in Thacker's car. Thacker said he then drove Lacey to the remote cabin in the woods.
He took off her pants, her shoes and socks, and her underwear. He rapes her. There's a metal chair in there. And he said he puts Lacey in the chair, restrains her arms, and then restrains her legs with these zip ties.
And I got too scared that, I'd get caught. And I was afraid she was gonna get loose. And then I just choked her.
With your hands?
Yes. I ended up stabbing her twice in the chest after I choked her. I didn't want to take the chance of her getting out and telling them in.
And choked her?
Yes.
And then you stabbed her? Okay. And then what happened?
Then I left.
He was afraid if he left her there, someone would find her and he would be caught. He tried to choke her and she wouldn't die, and she's fighting for her life. He decided to stab her.
Agent Francini was disgusted by Thacker's attitude.
Struck me how easy he could sit there and tell me about killing Lacey Hill and show absolutely no emotion. My thought was, this is a cold, cold individual. He doesn't really care.
He showed no signs of remorse whatsoever.
After Thacker's arrest, authorities allowed Trina to speak with her husband. She begged her husband to tell her how he had turned into a stone-cold killer.
He just told me that he was scared. He didn't want to get caught. That's all he could tell me.
It was devastating for Trina to realize that the man she had married had no regard for human life.
I had a nervous breakdown from it. I was completely devastated that he could take lives like that, like it was nothing.
On December 2nd, 2002, Stephen Thacker pled guilty to Lacey Hill's murder. At the sentencing hearing, Mays County District Attorney Gene Haynes asked the judge for the death penalty. District Attorney Gene Haynes.
The way the crime was committed, the suffering that the victim had to go through, I felt that this was a case that definitely justified the ultimate penalty of death.
Lacey Hill's father was filled with rage as Stephen Thacker was led into the courtroom.
They had deputies sitting all around me in the courtroom. And I told him, I said, if he cracks a smile, I'm after him. I want to kill him.
But ultimately, it was the judge that sentenced Stephen Thacker to death. On March 13th, 2013, the loved ones of all three of Thacker's victims gathered at the state penitentiary in Oklahoma to attend Thacker's execution.
I didn't want to at first. I didn't think I would be able to handle seeing that. But then I decided that I wanted the closure. I had been through this entire process with the family from start, and I wanted to finish it with her dad.
I did want to see him put to death for what he'd done to my daughter. It would never brought my daughter back, but at least he paid for what he'd done to her.
Lacey's father still struggles to comprehend why Stephen Thacker was driven to kill his daughter.
Why would he kill such a young, beautiful woman over a few dollars for Christmas presents? He took so much from us, so much. It's unbelievable what one man can take from you.
Before he was executed for his crimes against Lacey Hill, Stephen Ray Thacker was tried and convicted of the murder of Ray Patterson and pled guilty to the murder of Forrest Boyd. Thanks for listening. Please don't forget to follow, rate, and review. And if you want more information on today's case, visit facebook.com/paulazanofficial or just click the link in the episode description. I'm Paula Zahn. Please join us again next Wednesday when we're back on the case, the podcast.